Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. On tonight's show, a conversation with the Chief Prosecutor for Clackamas County, District Attorney John Foote. Do you think there has been any kind of evolution in the way law enforcement is approached out here in Clackamas from before your tenure through now? I mean,
I don't really know that because obviously I don't know what was going on before I came. I started my work working for Mike Strunk in Multnomah County for 10 years, and that's kind of where I learned how to be a professional in my line of work. But maybe it would be helpful if I spoke for a minute about what I perceive as an area that's largely misunderstood or not, people don't know about how do district attorney's offices work with law enforcement? What is the relationship? And it's not simple because we have two components really that can compete with each other. The first is we are a partner with law enforcement, a really important relationship where we support each other. And what I mean by that is we try and help them do their work right, and they try and bring us cases that can be proven in court against people who are truly guilty. That's our goal. So it's important that we help educate police about what the law is, and it's important for them to educate us about all the challenges involved in investigating and handling crime. So there's this very close working relationship, which we encourage. We encourage law enforcement to come in and talk to us. If they have questions, if they don't know what to do with something, or they need some ideas, or they just want to consult, our door is always open. We think that's a very important part. So we have this very close collaborative relationship. But on the other hand, we are independent. And our office has this responsibility to act independently. First of all, we decline to prosecute cases that the police bring to us. Last year, I think we declined to prosecute 10 to 15% of all the felony cases that came in. Now, the reasons why we did that have to do with facts and law. Did we have enough facts? Was the evidence brought to us in a way that we can use in court according to search and seizure laws and other things? So it doesn't necessarily have to do with somebody, whether somebody's guilty or not. There's a difference between whether we think someone's guilty looking at things and whether or not we can prove it in court. And that's our job. So sometimes that can create tension with police because they want us to prosecute something and we just don't think we can. So we always try and reach out to them, explain why, and maybe there are things they can do to make the case better, a variety of things. But that's one relationship where we're partners, but we're independent. And then the other is sometimes we're in the position where the crime could be committed by a prosecutor too. It's not just anybody. It doesn't matter who they are. But sometimes it can be an elected official. It could be anybody. So, and these things happen because we're all human beings. I believe every group of people is on a bell curve. So, you know, where that leaves some people, the small minority. So, and it can happen in law enforcement. So our job is to make sure that we're doing that fairly and well. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in our office all the time is while we're doing the work, while we're investigating and prosecuting, our information is, we don't share it with the public because we need to protect the integrity of the investigations and make sure we've got our information and we control the information so that we can, it's much easier to figure out who's telling us the truth and who isn't if we can control the flow of information. But when it's over, first of all, when we file the charges, we give all that information to the defense. But then when the case is over, everything eventually is public. So whether we prosecute the case or not, and what we tell our folks is make sure that you can explain whatever your decisions are. That's the key. Make sure you can stand up and explain it because we owe people an explanation if they ask. And we do a lot of this. We get a lot of phone calls and letters every day from people wanting to know why we did something. Sometimes it's the person who was prosecuted. Sometimes it's the victim. Sometimes it's just a citizen. And I think one of our jobs is to be able to explain these things because people don't understand they either demonize us or they lionize us, and they don't understand the nature of what we do. So Mike Schrunk taught me that there's a lot of authority that comes with our jobs, but with that comes a lot of responsibility to do it carefully and well.
I just would love to follow up on a thing. The county commissioners a few weeks ago said that they wanted to appoint an independent consultant to review the sheriff's office and to review some really strong concerns. One of the things that engenders disrespect for law and the rule of law is when people in enforcement are caught out either ignoring the job or committing crimes, and it's that perception. On the one hand, when they're caught and prosecuted, you have people say, "Oh, I knew that stuff was going on." On the other hand, being caught and prosecuted means the system is working. It may have taken time, and what happened in the past is sad, but at least it's working finally. So how do we rebuild the respect for law that people should have, and overcome? How do we overcome some of the negative stories that we hear?
Well, there's a certain amount of that that comes with a job. This country was created on a rebellion against authority, and it's a rich tradition in the United States. And I personally don't think that's a bad thing. And I'm in a position of authority, and I think it's important to question, because I do believe that old saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So I think one of the ways, if you're in a position like I'm in, you can't always change people's perceptions, but we have to be able to explain what we do. And it isn't just police officers. People in authority we have to do our best to put them in the same standards that we do other people. Now, not everyone agrees on the decisions we make, but that's what's in our mind. And I think that's the way we do it, and we explain what we do. And when we make a mistake, we admit it. Right now there's tension in the county about this issue. I'm trying to do my job, and I've tried to be open and direct with the sheriff about my concerns. And these things, they're not easy, and they're ripe for misunderstandings. But I believe the commissioner is going to try and do the right thing here, and we'll just see how it turns out.
Yep, we all just have to hope for the best. I will continue following the story and see how things go out. And I don't want to, stir up any fuss with your office and the sheriff. You're both trying to do your jobs, and it's not easy because it involves people, and that's talk about wild cards.
Law enforcement is very challenging, and being a leader in law enforcement is very challenging. And people just don't. Most people do not understand the things that people in law enforcement, and to a lesser degree, but also our office, the things we see that people do to each other. It's stunning. People don't believe this world exists, but it does exist. And we understand that it isn't always understood by the public. And our job is to be able to explain what we do and try and come up with fair, just results. Mike Schrunk always talked about, make sure you do the right thing. It's a very simple sounding thing, but it pushes you towards that sense of what's right. And I believe in that.
You are listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Today, we're talking about the criminal justice system with Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote. This was recorded at the beginning of August, so it's worth noting that between then and now, the Clackamas County Commission has hired an outside independent consultant to review the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. It's the OIR Group, which has also performed reviews of the Portland Police Bureau. Now, let's get back to my conversation with Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote. So you do have a drug court here. What kind of clients, what kind of, I guess they'd
clients, defendants. That's your from this perspective. What kind of people end up being put through the drug courts here in Clackamas?
Well, it's a variety of people. We tend to not just deal with, we try not to take on people who aren't a little more enmeshed. We want people who are a little more enmeshed in it. It's hard to do. One of the difficult things with any program, whether it's drug court or anything else that sounds very humanitarian and well-intentioned, is to try and separate those feelings. Because I worked for nonprofits for at-risk kids before I went to law school. I know the feeling of working with people like that and why it's so meaningful. But that's that process versus, is there scientific evidence that it reduces crime and recidivism? Now, I'm sort of not invited into a lot of rooms because I push this issue a lot. And it's not, people give lip service to it, in my opinion. But we need a lot more rigor about what actually works. And the only way to do that is more rigorous evaluations. And the word rigorous evaluations, I mean, all these words are used, but the most rigorous evaluation of a program is a randomized controlled trial. And they're rare. But if you don't do them, it's very difficult to separate whether it's the program that's changing the behavior or the behavior would have changed regardless of the program. So, you know, you might get good outcomes, but is the program doing that? And that's what you do in medicine. They do randomized controlled trials to try and figure out if it's the drug that's causing the effect. So it's the same principle, and it's still new to public safety. It's becoming much more common in education, places like that. And this is hard to say because we want to be good people. We want to be kind. We want to be caring. And as a person, I believe that. But as a criminal justice person, we're in the crime and justice business. So if it's not reducing crime and recidivism as a program, my question is, should we be spending the money in this part of the system? And that's a hard pull. You get a lot of criticism. I get a lot of criticism from people in the business because I say these things, but I keep saying them because I think they're right. I think in the long run, if we did this, we would have fewer programs, but perhaps better results. So, we have to make a commitment to it. And then if we're going to do a program that we just want to do because we think it's right and caring, but we don't know if it reduces crime, then we just say that. But then the question is, does it belong in criminal justice or does it belong somewhere else? So, these are hard questions. And addiction itself is so difficult. I tell people, the hardest thing to do is change human behavior, right? All we have to do is look at ourselves. How hard is it for us to change? I quit smoking 44 years ago.
Congratulations.
I still remember the date because it was one of the hardest things I've ever did. I quit 100 times. Well, I never quit until I finally quit, but I tried to quit. This is just the nature of, first of all, changing human behavior, and second of all, particularly when there are addictions. And we just need to admit that this is hard work. I'm not saying we need to lock a bunch of people up, but we need to get a lot more honest about this stuff. And a lot of the solutions are much broader in society than criminal justice. By the time we touch somebody, they're into it. We almost never get someone at the beginning of this process. We get them once they're into it, whether it's crime or addiction or both. So those are just some thoughts that cross my mind. Yes, we need to do things, but I think we need to keep asking the question, where's the evidence that it's going to change crime and recidivism? And maybe there's something else that's better that we could spend the money on. But most of these programs are not run by our office. We participate and we support them. We have a wide variety of treatment courts here. We have a mental health court. We have a community court. And I think one of Mike Schrunk's most innovative programs was the neighborhood or community prosecution program he set up in Portland that was that took prosecution in a different way. Rather than just reacting to crime, he said, why don't we go out into the community and try and work with the community on some solutions that actually reduce the effects in the community. He did this with the nuisance abatement and the against drug houses in Portland. We have that program in Clackamas County. We've had it for about 15 years. I stole that idea from Mike. So, and it creates a connection with the community where you empower the community to think of ways that they could ask government to help them. We're doing it now with zombie houses here in the county and the people that are popping up in them. And that's up in your neighborhood. So, and we're taking it a little bit at a time. We put some money in our budget to help pay for some of the work. But we're only one piece of this. And our fundamental job, what we spend most of our time on, is holding people accountable for serious crime. And we need to do that first. But this other stuff, we're humans too. We're citizens too. We care about this stuff.
Given my background, one might presume that I'm very much a proponent of drug courts. Actually, there are so many concerns, the prospect of net widening, because it's easier to process people, so put more people into the system and mm-hmm. bring it back to that point of instability. The cherry picking, like, all right, this one will be a successful graduate because doesn't really have any problems. And then there's the resource trouble. I mean, let's be seen as doing something, so we'll create this thing, but not give it any support and not give any kind of resources to the people coming through it. So if they fail, well. And that's the, it's a tricky thing. It's a really tricky thing. You're right. I mean, these are complicated. They're not cut and dried. And that's the toughest part of this. Now, that leads me over toward House Bill 2355. Now, two aspects in that bill. It's the one is the racial profiling component and data collection, and I certainly want to talk to you about that one. But we're in the it's a sentence. This segues towards sentencing. The other part was the penalty reduction, in a sense. Some people have called it a partial decriminalizing, not removing criminal penalties, but de-escalating, de-emphasizing, reducing from, so it's a partial, from a felony to a misdemeanor for first offense, simple possession. Now, the one person who spoke against that was Josh Marquis. From is it Clatsop? On the one hand, well, we want to have these. On the other hand, he was also saying, well, we don't really charge that anyway. Nobody's actually, we're not going to really put people in. So the question gets begged, if you're not doing that and they're not really going to, why keep it a felony and pretend? Now, did you have a position on HB 2355 on this thing, or did you stay out of it?
Well, I didn't go down and testify, and I wasn't active in the conversation. But I can kind of summarize. First of all, I think race and criminal justice is an incredibly important issue. I grew up in the 50s and 60s in the East Coast with the civil rights movement. My parents were very involved. It's a kind of a core value of mine. And racism is one of the purest forms of injustice. So if we're in the justice business, we care about racism as a person and as a professional. So, but getting into the data about what the numbers mean is, first of all, data can mislead as well as inform. And you need to be careful about it. And so the question is, can we have a really honest conversation about the data and what it might mean without being called names? And that's very hard right now. But I think more information is really important. And I, in principle, I support the part of the bill that starts to try and gather contact information between police and community people, because I think that could help inform. The second thing I did was, I've been pushing for a victimization study, and we're now setting one up with the Criminal Justice Commission in Salem. They're good people, and they're thinking about this, because we only talk about racial components with offenders. We never talk about the racial components with victims. And the truth is, there's disparity on both sides. So what does that mean? These are tough questions. So I believe we need to talk about them. I need to be open about them. And I'll give you an example. And I'll bet you no one has told you this, but I have the data. Since Measure 11 passed in 1995, which I'm sure you don't like, or most people don't like, most people, perhaps a lot of your listening audience, a lot of people in Clackamas County like it, but racial disparity in the prison population has dropped dramatically. Now, it's still, there is disparity still, but it's dropped dramatically. No one ever talks about that. No one ever talks about the fact that those kinds of laws, with 57, which isn't a mandatory minimum set law, but it is an enhanced sentencing, and it kind of narrows the choices of the court a little bit and the things it can consider. The result of that is that certain groups of people who used to get breaks, and you can guess who they are, they don't get them anymore. The disparity starts to shrink. So how do we put that in the pipe and smoke it? I mean, how does that figure into all this? That goes in a complete opposite direction of most people who are upset about racial disparity. That mandatory minimums and tougher sentencing laws reduce disparity in Oregon. They did. So now, setting that issue aside, because that's a big subject and very difficult to talk about without people getting very upset. And I understand why they got upset. This is a personal thing. But let's just go back to the drugs, because on the drug side, I thought it was kind of a dumb idea, because I don't think it's going to change anything. And I think it's going to make Oregon perceived as a place that's more friendly to people who want to use meth and heroin, which I don't think is a great idea. The current law before this law was passed in Oregon basically was that if you possessed meth and heroin, you committed a felony on paper, but you were ineligible for a prison sentence. You could not go to prison for it. You could only be put on probation. And the reason is the law was changed in 1989 and drug possession was taken out of the category of crimes that's eligible for a prison sentence. So we haven't been sending people to prison in Oregon for drug crimes for a long time. We're number two in the country in the lowest percentage of our prison population to send prison for drugs, and they are drug dealers. And even if you're a drug dealer, you probably aren't going to go unless you're dealing a lot of dope and you have a criminal history. So that's kind of the nature of the way things were. What does this change? I don't really know. And the truth is, because these crimes were felonies with no real consequences in terms of imprisonment, we handled them as a tool to leverage people into getting to facing their drug use because of the threat of this conviction. And we did a variety of things. We give people deferred sentencing so that they, if they did all the conditions, their felony turns into a misdemeanor at the end of their supervision. We would do conditional discharges. We did a variety of things and gave people chances. You can get your conviction expunged after 3 years, even if you get convicted of the felony. So there were a wide variety of avenues for people, which we all use because we're not trying to demonize people. But drug use is a scourge, and it is a scourge on our society. It is, meth and heroin are incredibly dangerous drugs. They kill people, and they destroy lives. And there's just no other way to put it. And why would we do anything to make it less decrease social disapproval of it? So that's kind of my feeling, but I understand the feeling of wanting to, quote, defelonize. I understand that. I'm not sure what that's going to do. I don't know. And I'll tell you what, the way the law is written, I don't know how the police are going to figure out what to do, because we're in the process of trying to help them, understanding what the law is and what they have to do to bring us a case. And it's gotten so complicated that I don't know. I don't know what, I mean, we'll sort through it, but it's really complicated now about how much they have and how much is this and how much is that, and you have to weigh it. And I mean, it's usually we would have the crime lab weigh it, but the crime lab can't weigh all these cases. So Do we hire a bunch of more criminals? I don't know. It's just, and I think a lot of people will be less inclined. There's a fear. I don't think it's going to be our drug court necessarily because of the way ours is set up. But there are a lot of people around the state who feel that when this goes to misdemeanors, people aren't going to have any reason to go to drug court because the leverage isn't there. So I don't know. I just don't know if this was really well thought out on this side of it. To me, it's like we're in this big bad rush to legalize everything. Well, since marijuana got legalized, which I also thought was a dumb idea, but I understand, and it's the law. So, but there's more marijuana in Oregon than ever. And that's what will happen if we keep legalizing drugs. There will be more drugs. So are we concerned about drug usage? I mean, and I know that the solutions aren't great. We don't want to demonize people, but I don't know. These are not easy choices for any of us. And in my role, I don't like to see things that make drug usage any less serious. So, but, you know, we don't write the laws. We try and enforce them. And I didn't go down and testify against the bill because I just figured there are other things that were more important. And there was plenty of robust debate about it already. And quite frankly, the legislature knew what it was going to do before this ever started. So it didn't really make any difference what some of us said. So I saved my breath.
That was a conversation with Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote. Well, as he promised, he gave me quite a bit of data. The Office of Economic Analysis Oregon Corrections Population Forecast from April of 2017, and also the Oregon District Attorney's Association's Oregon Criminal Justice System in 2016, a continuing success story. And well, that's it for this week. You have been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and previous installments of the show on the web at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give it a like. I want to thank my guest, Clackamas County District Attorney John Foote, for his time and particularly for his willingness to engage. A quick thank you to our engineers, Danielle Parks and Mike Vitaklis. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for joining us. You make it all worth it. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.